Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Well, the Mexican Minister of Defense couldn't quite hold off everybody, but he still managed to claim another podium at his home race in front of his adoring home fans. And, of course, his very, very beloved father. Welcome to episode 243 of Grid Talk. And today we are here to discuss the race from the 2022 Mexican Grand Prix. My name is Tom Downey, and joining me, we have my F1 Grid Talk co-host, Owen Medford. Hello, sir.
Hello.
We have F1 historian Alex Booth.
Hello.
And last but by absolutely no means least at all, one of my firm favourites here, Philip Matthew from the Grid Fit podcast.
Hello. Good evening.
Hello, Phil. But first, just before we begin, if you enjoy this podcast, we would love it if you could take five to leave us a five-star rating on Spotify or a five-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you do, you'll automatically go into our monthly draw to win a Grid Talk t-shirt from our champion range of merch. Also, if you're one of the 72% of people who are not yet subscribed to the channel, please consider helping us out with a like and a subscribe. So, Mexico 2022, a race which a lot of people were hyping up. A lot of people were saying was going to be, I think, sick, as the kids say, or lit, or for hashtag fire. It was a bit more of a damp squib, if you ask me. Owen, I'll go to you first. Max Verstappen, P1. It was never really in doubt, was it?
I wouldn't necessarily agree totally with that. I would say, like, up until we sort of cycled through the pit stops and see where the hard tyres actually were, it looked like that we had sort of quite an interesting sort of race on our hands. But then, obviously, you know, I think Mercedes got a little bit too caught up in their own strategy and maybe looking at how the mediums would perform on their car compared to what is still a very fast Red Bull over a race. I think, to be honest, that, you know, Max is driving better than ever, and there's a reason that there's a 15 second gap between him and Lewis Hamilton. And obviously, that gap has, you know, as we've seen over the season, it's gotten smaller. But yeah, you can just tell it's, you know, Max is utterly ruthless. You know, it would have been easy for him to just go, no, I can take the hit on this one. I've won the championship. I'll let Sergio win his home race. But as we've seen, Max Verstappen is he's there to, you know, smash records and crank out numbers. He's now the first ever 14-time winner in a single season. Obviously, it's a much inflated season, but that's still astounding. There's you know, so many times more that you could not win in a season. And he's managed to do it in dominant fashion is kind of, by the end of the race, is kind of astounding.
Yeah, it is absolutely worth mentioning, and I would say that as a Max fan, that he has won a record 14 races in a season. He will be the first person to point out that we have many, many more races in a season, you know, to achieve this kind of record. But yes, finishing P2 and mimicking the 2021 podium, Phil, we have your man Lewis Hamilton. Ultimately, couldn't quite bring the fight on the hard tyres. I think Mercedes were perhaps hoping they were going to last a bit longer than they did, or they hoped the mediums could have a bit more of a drop-off. Do you think P2 was the best he was realistically going to get, or do you think he was in the hunt for the win today?
I think for your guy, Tom, he was in management mode. We were talking about it before, and a lot of this race was management of temperatures and then all the different things, because all these engine and power unit components and the cars are pushed to their limit with three races to go. Max got the start. Lewis got within 1.2, 1.3, I think at one point early in that first segment. What really dictated the race, and I thought about it just a little bit just before we got on, that I think Lewis wanted to go longer in that first segment to try and maybe give himself some more options. It was the same thing that we're going to talk about with his teammate, but the having to pit to cover off Sergio Perez with the speed that he had, I think really dictated a lot of what took place afterwards. Yes, the hard tire, as per usual, seemingly was not that great. And, you know, it didn't work there on the Mercedes for Lewis or for his teammate. Second place for a second race in a row, considering where he was and where this team, his side of the garage was at the start of this season, now to be up there and at least in the mix. It's a positive sign to move into the next season. Verstappen is in his own planet. And so they just have to deal with that and make the necessary changes and adjustments to the car next year to see if they can at least bring the fight to Red Bull, to Max Verstappen, again. But, you know, Lewis getting a second place finish for a guy, I mean, you know, all the world championships and wins he has, yes, it doesn't seem so great, but from where he was at the start of the year to now, second on merit, is positive progress this season. So we got to take it for what it is. Max is probably going to win the rest of these races, and that's fine, and he's earned it. But, you know, Lewis is going to try to get himself up and make it as good of a finish as he can for this season in 2022.
Absolutely. And I just want to say, I think you made a very good point. If you think about where Mercedes were at the start of the year, you know, he went out obviously in Q1 in Jeddah and took up the pace. You know, they have made an awful lot of progress this season, even if people perhaps don't necessarily think it. But Alex, speaking of teammates, Sergio Perez, the home hero, if you like, P3, maybe would have expected a bit more from him today. But it's also hard when your teammate is just driving on a different planet at the moment. Do you think he could have caught Hamilton? Do you think maybe he was perhaps sort of lifting and coasting, just wanted to bring it home to have the podium in front of his fans, in front of his home fans?
Yeah, I think he could have caught Lewis, actually. I think he will have expected to have gone a bit better than P3 in front of his home crowd. I think it was kind of hampered a bit by him qualifying P4 yesterday. That probably didn't help. And the start was not outstanding. It was okay, but not brilliant. He did manage to get ahead of Russell, although I think that was more down to Russell being a bit over-exuberant in the first corner rather than Perez making a great start himself. But it's very hard to overtake in Mexico. We've seen that in previous years there. So his chances of getting past Lewis will have been a bit slim. So P3, under those circumstances, would have probably been the best that he could hope for. I mean, I predicted that he would actually have taken the win. I thought he would have, prior to the weekend, I thought he would have been really up for it. And with the championship being wrapped up, I didn't think Red Bull would be too... negligent to allow him to do that. But as we've said, Verstappen is in a league of his own. I think P3 was really the best that Sergio could hope for. But he did get a podium in front of his home crowd. I mean, it doesn't produce the greatest of races in recent years, does the Mexico City circuit, but the atmosphere there looks absolutely fantastic. And we've got that for another 3 years, which is a fantastic thing to see.
No, absolutely. I fully agree with you. You know, the atmosphere, you know, if you look at the podium ceremony, you know, they always seem to have a DJ, not any of whom I'm familiar with. And you know, just the crowd and everybody bouncing and all the rest of it. It always looks like a great place to be. So, yeah, so it's I think it is good for Sergio that he got to have that. But, I'm P4, George Russell. Did set the fastest lap at the end. I mean, he had nothing to lose by going for it. You know, he had a huge gap to Perez in front and Sainz behind, so it was a bit of a no-brainer. The only car out of the top 10 to two-stop as well, when a lot of us thought it was going to be a two-stop. Interesting race for him. What's your hot take on Mr. Russell?
I think kind of proved that he could probably get a cut out that hard tire stint altogether, to be honest. It seemed to work relatively well for Daniel Ricciardo. And I think he kind of needed it once George had dropped back. He needed something slightly daring. Once Georgia obviously had that not so great start, I think that's sort of probably as a result of inexperience rather than anything else, to be honest. He just placed his car wrong, and unfortunately that caused him to drop behind, and then the problems sort of get exacerbated. There's not much downforce to begin with around Mexico, and then sitting, you know, three cars back, it gets worse after that. I think they needed to be a bit more daring than they were. And it just seemed like the Mercedes were a bit looking too deeply into their strategy, rather than maybe trying to get out in front. I think they were daring the wrong way almost, on that one. But yeah, so it didn't work out well for George Russell in the end. But then again, to be honest, they finished in front of the Ferraris, and I think that's the bigger takeaway here, is that they didn't lose out to Ferrari, which is where I think they can really make an impact. That's Mercedes' fight now, and it would be awful for Ferrari to suffer the ignominy of it. But I think sort of the race that George Russell has had has helped bring down that gap to just 40 points.
Yeah, it seems like a bit of a sort of far cry for Ferrari, that given the start of the season, you know, they look like the team to beat, and now they're clutching on to clutching on is probably the best phrase. They're clutching on to P2 with about half a fingernail, as it seems to stand. Phil, the Ferrari drivers, Carlos Sainz P5, Charles Leclerc P6. I'll give you them both together. Why not? They're both next to each other. Yeah, just basically get out of the way. They were largely sort of ambiguous today.
Yeah, they didn't
off you go,
really
Phil.
Show up. Yeah, they didn't show up today, Tom. It was quite interesting. I know that based on FIA rules, you have to go and run your car to a certain percentage of its limit. But it almost seemed like the Ferraris were just at 90 or 85% this whole weekend. Now, granted, we know that the Ferrari power unit has definitely had more issues than Honda, than Red Bull powertrain, than Mercedes, than Alpine and Renault. But come on, man. They really weren't in the fight in qualifying. They got beat, you know, essentially on merit by the Mercedes. Then in this race, they disappeared during that first segment when the top four cars all were within 4.5-5 seconds of each other. The Ferraris were in their own stratosphere. At the end of the day, I don't know what the plan is. Maybe they'll have something better for Brazil. Maybe they're holding on to Abu Dhabi. Maybe they just don't care anymore. I don't know. But if Mercedes continues, as Owen said, it's 40 points. If they can, they need to obviously need to score more, and if they could get a win somehow, some way, it would make it a lot easier. But if they can, you know, chip away 15, 20 points, at Brazil, then it could actually be a real fight at Abu Dhabi for the last race of the season, where I think the Mercedes car might have a little more of an opportunity relative based on what they've got. But Ferrari, I don't know what their plan was this weekend. It didn't seem to have much in the way of getting anywhere unless there was more attrition. So unfortunate, I guess, for the people who love the Scuderia, the Tifosi and all, for what they had this weekend. But at least both of them finished, and that helps them in second in the Drivers' Championship race, at least for Charles Leclerc, even though he lost ground to Sergio Perez.
Yeah, I've got to be honest, I'm just more impressed that neither of the Ferraris overheated in Mexico, because their reliability has been shocking this season, which has sort of cost them where they are. But Alex, you're an F1 historian. Here's an old figure for you in F1, Daniel Ricciardo. Where do we begin? Because first off, forgive me for sort of like maybe interrupting your flow a bit here or sort of stealing your limelight, but for me, certainly Daniel Ricciardo, at first it was sort of like No, when I say no, not vintage, that's no, completely opposite. It was typical Daniel Ricciardo, where he was just stuck outside the points in a DRS train trying to scrap with some like little team that nobody really knows anything about. The next thing you know, he punts on it off the track, gets a 10-second penalty, and ends up P7. Explain that one to us.
Well, he certainly won the award for the most entertaining driver of the day, didn't he? Yeah, it was never really on, was it, that move that was on Tsunoda? I think that was more of frustration than anything. That's a difficult place to pull a pass, and it was a bit ambitious. And although I agree with Martin Brundle in the commentary, I think a 10-second penalty was a tiny bit harsh. I think a 5-second one would have been more adequate. But he did what he had to do. He pulled the gap out, and he ended up seventh. And for once, he made his teammate Lando Norris look a little bit anonymous. It's not his best result of the season, but it was probably his most convincing performance, because he's had a poor season. I don't know. I still don't know where he's going to end up next season. I don't think he'll be in a race seat. But yeah, he can take some solace of the fact that he drove well today, barring that one dodgy move.
Yeah, it was like the Danny Rick of old, when he was sort of like late breaking anybody and everybody on the grid. It was just like, it was like someone lit a fire underneath him, or maybe he couldn't assign a being on the blower trip midway through and said, listen, hon, if you want to race, seat with us next year, get a wiggle on. So yeah, I was mostly impressed. Apart from when he punted Tsunoda off. But yeah, at least he didn't do that in Japan, eh? Owen, P8, Esteban Ocon. I mean, well done. You finished in the points. You've started in the points. Anything to add?
I mean, he started in 10th, so he's gone up two places. I think the most exciting thing about Esteban Ocon's race was the pass around the outside of Bottas into T1. I think that's more on Bottas's sort of shoulders for letting it go that easily. I'll be honest, it looked like he was in a different formula or was on a warm up lap or something, because there's no way I thought that Ocon was getting around there, but. You know, that was probably the most entertaining thing. Other than that, we didn't really see too much. I do recall him doing something, but I can't remember exactly what it is. But yeah, I mean, it's for me, it's kind of, you know, Alpine need to do, and their drivers, you know, by extension, need to do just enough to finish ahead of McLaren. That's their real fight. There's only sort of 7 points between them. And by finishing ahead of Lando Norris, you know, he's helped outscore them by 2 points. You know, and take the lion's share of the points today. So, you know, he's kind of limited the drop in points that Alpine were always going to have after Alonso's engine basically went bang. But you know, apart from that, and an overtake, I don't think there's much more to be said about it. But he climbed a couple of positions, but that was about it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think you sort of hit the nail on the head with Ocon there. Just behind him, Phil, Lando Norris, like you said, large anonymous. He went on to the hard tyres, which, as we saw with the Mercs, was not the tyre to go on. He finishing the points, well done. Anything to add for Lando?
I mean, he, one of the only times in the last 2 years, I mean, Alex brought it up, you guys brought it up with Daniel Ricciardo, that Daniel Ricciardo soundly beat him. It wasn't going to be that way before the race started, of course, but it worked out that way in the race. In their battle with Alpine, though, double points keeps them right in the mix. Keeps that battle going as we go to Brazil here in a couple of weeks' time, keeps it to 7 points. So that's something to look at. Yes, it wasn't the ideal scenario for Lando Norris, but, you know, getting double points at this juncture is huge. And to keep it within, you know, single digits with two races to go, something to see relative to what these next two tracks might hold for both of these teams. So not what he wanted, Lando, but getting points was a necessity in this case to keep the constructors interesting.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, it's with McLaren, it's about their fight with Alpine at the moment, and any points will do for them, pretty much. Alex, running out the points, Valtteri Bottas. I mean, we said that he got made to look a bit of a mug by Esteban Ocon. I think he was having a siesta at the entry to turn one when Ocon came sniffing up behind him. But aside from that, is his first point finish since Canada as well, is worth pointing out.
Yeah, he'll be glad of that. I think that was really getting to Alfa Romeo. I think Joe scored a point in Monza, but that was the only point they'd had since Canada. He qualified extremely well, starting sixth. It's probably a bit too much to ask for him to finish at that high in the race or even higher. But points were on the agenda, and it was only one point, but he got it. Thankfully, that drought has gone. They can come away satisfied with that. Like you say, but it wasn't Valtteri's best race performance, but still they needed the points, and they got one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's not much else to add there. Owen, P11, and I'll give you his teammate as well because he's the only technical non-classified. So we'll talk about the AlphaTauris together. Pierre Gasly, P11, Yuki Tsunoda, DNF on lap 52 with after contact with Daniel Ricciardo. How do you rate the AlphaTauri boy band duo today?
I don't think Tsunoda did anything wrong. As we've established, you know, the contact was all Daniel. Tsunoda didn't do anything wrong. And to be honest, I kind of wish that Tsunoda had just stopped it on track somewhere else, or got debris somewhere just so that there would be a safety car or something. That's the only complaint I can level at him. Up until that, he was doing a fine job. There's not much more to say because unfortunately, our favourite Australian kind of put the kibosh on that one. That just leaves us with Gasly, who that bit of an own goal really. You know, with him being the only person who could therefore hold up the point scoring abilities, basically, of the AlphaTauris, it didn't go great. I think prior to Tsunoda's retirement, he'd locked up and forced Stroll off the track. That incurred a 5-second penalty. They then took that at the pit stop. I think Ted Kravitz reported that that was something in the neighbourhood of, that, you know, they counted that something in the neighbourhood of about 6 seconds. And then if we look at the timings, he was, you know, within half a second of points, I believe. That's what F1's reporting in their race report. You know, that point would have brought them above the Haas. It seems kind of astounding to me that the AlphaTauris are still ninth in the table and they're so desperately close to scoring points that are going to get them a crucial eighth place. I mean, that comes with less aerodynamic testing time, but it also comes with more money. It's not a good look to have a team, you know, I don't think the gap between the sister teams of Red Bull and AlphaTauri has ever been bigger at this point. It's a really, really bad look. And they're just one point off, you know, one or two points of getting ahead. I would say it's a kind of crap weekend for the AlphaTauris. You know, one's not of their own making, but one definitely is.
Yeah, especially if you think about where Gasly finished last year. He was, what, P4, I think? P5? He was one of those two. But he was having a storming season, and this year he's... just not happening for them. You know, Tsunoda DNFing 2 years in a row here. This year, completely not his fault at all, as he said. But yes, it's going to... I think they're just waiting for the season to be finished. Now we've got two races left, and they're counted down the laps, I think. Next up, Phil, you lucky devil, I'll give you Williams. So Alex Albon finished P12, and the ghost himself, Latifi, the only driver to be lapped twice in this race, Finished P18. At least he finished. That's I don't think that's anything to celebrate. Any word on the Williams? It was a rocket ship down the straights, actually.
Yeah, that's definitely true, Tom. I mean, Alex Albon has been in his return to consider being on a ventilator a few weeks ago, and now back in a race car and actually being somewhat, you know, back to form is a miracle in itself, I guess, and it's credit to the people that he's around and himself. Getting 12th place, best result I think you could probably get there. It's going to be very hard for Williams to score anywhere. That's been the case all year. So for him, he's doing the best he can given the circumstances. His teammate, who is possibly, well, likely not going to have a job next, really definitely not going to have a job next year, who's going to be replacing him, is still to be determined. Even Williams screwed that up this week because they didn't keep Logan Sargeant out for enough laps so he could get 100K in FP1 so he could get an extra super license point. So the fact that Latifi was completely non-factor is why Nicholas Latifi is probably calling IndyCar teams right now to see where he can bring his sponsorship to, or insert LMP2 team here, which is more likely his scenario for next year in the WEC.
Yeah, it'll be interesting where he ends up next year. Nice guy, but he's not F1 material, as he's proven. It's next up, P13, Alex. We have Guanyu Zhou. Looked at one point like he's going to finish in the points. Sadly, didn't quite come to fruition for him. He was having a couple of good battles with I think it was one of the Alpine drivers, or there was someone he was scrapping with back and forth, or it might be Sebastian Vettel actually, towards the closing stages of the race. How'd you rate his performance today?
Before I answer that, I just wanted to add on something about Pierre Gasly, because I don't want to interrupt anybody, but he's got to be careful because he's on 10 super license points. So if he does any more moves like that, he'll have the unfortunate distinction of becoming the first driver to have a race ban because of the super license rule. But Aston Martin, they were had fallen down really, because they had a good race in Austin, and if Stroll had had that incident with Alonso, it could have been a double points score. And they were nowhere this weekend. But that's a trait that we've become familiar with Aston Martin. It's nothing really much to write home about them, really. I can't really think of anything to say about them. I'm sorry, you're not really getting your money's worth out of me on that one.
That's all right. I mean we're sort of down into the dregs anyway now. No disrespect to any of the drivers. Obviously, they do a job that I could never do. I want to give you both Astons together. Vettel P14, Stroll P15, Stroll pitted twice. Vettel was having a couple of good scraps with Zhou Guanyu, and he was having some good early ding dongs. Anything to add about the Aston boys?
We could point out that Lance Stroll started 20th and, you know, got four places, which I think is kind of more than anyone else did. And then was it four places? Have I done my maths right? Probably not. 20th. Five places. I tell a lie. Four on track places that he actually had to do overtakes for. Apart from that, nah, it's a bit. It's not great. it's not great for the level of investment they're putting in, is it?
Did you ask me about Haas or Aston Martin? Because I answered about Aston Martin.
No, it's about Alfa Romeo.
Oh, sorry, I misheard
you. This race is so bad, we're forgetting which midfield teams we're talking about.
I'm sorry, fairness, the Alfa Romeo, like, do you remember seeing Guanyu Zhou doing anything?
I saw him back out of it. It looked like he was going to do a similar route to Daniel Ricciardo on somebody, and he backed out of it, which is smart, because he could have ended his race there. So that was a plus point for him.
Yeah, and I mean, you showed Daniel Ricciardo how you ever taken that corner, which is ironic for a rookie.
What, you don't?
Exactly. You know when to pick your battles. But apologies, I'm rubbing my eye. It's half 11 here and I'm really tired. Phil, you have the distinct honor of both the Haas drivers. Anything? I will just ask you, anything to add? Mick Schumacher, P16. Kevin Magnussen, P17. Both a lap down. Anything to add?
At least our NASCAR counterparts are actually decent today, because they definitely didn't show up on Formula One side. That's all.
Perfect.
Worst performing Haas in America. That's it.
Yeah, that's all we need. And then Alex, I'll give you this one lastly because I've been wanting to say this. Fernando Alonso went from El Plan to El Pain after his engine went bye-bye. I was chatting to a mate of mine. She said it looked like one of the tear-off strips came flying out the back of his car. I don't know if that was just placebo effect or what, but we had a couple of interesting radio messages from him. His engine absolutely chewed itself. I bet he can't wait to be racing Lance Stroll next year.
I wasn't aware of the tear-off strip thing, but that would make sense because that's happened before. That's taken drivers out of races in the past. Alonso, another reliability problem for him and Alpine. I'm going to get a lot of stick for saying this, but it's probably karma for some of the comments that he said over the weekend, which I think is, I mean, he's entitled to his opinion, but I think he's talking absolute nonsense. He was driving well, as he always does, and unfortunately the car let him down again. But like you say, he looks very keen to leave Alpine from what he's saying, but I can't see if things are going to get any better at Aston Martin, if truth be told.
No, and it's only a matter of time before he goes calling back to the Enstone team. You know,
he's done it three times.
Exactly, yeah. But yeah, I mean, there's only one thing you can say about what you just said about Alonso.
Karma. I was thinking that at the time.
Yeah, that's it. So that is your very, very quick sort of like race run through, if you like. Got to be honest, for me, not the most sort of like entertaining race we've had all season. It felt very sort of like Mercedes-esque, where Hamilton got pole and drove off into the distance. Just this time, it was Max. It wasn't a classic by any stretch. I think it's fair to say. But that thus rounds out the Mexican Grand Prix. So, just before we go on, perhaps you've got anything else you want to add about the race, about the weekend, about F1?
It wasn't the worst race of the season, I don't think. It could have been better.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was a bit of a damp squib.
It's the least controversial race that we've had so far, I think.
Possibly.
Like, probably the least controversial we've had in a few months.
The most controversial thing was that they didn't throw a safety car. Well, they didn't need to. I think we were just bored.
Yeah.
It would have been a bit funny, I think, if they had a safety car. It would have been a bit too obvious that it was...
Imagine if they had a red flagged it.
Oof.
No, you got to do the safety car. You can't red flag because then you can change tyres. If they wanted battles, they'd had to go safety car.
Yeah, so then everybody pits, comes out on fresh rubber, and then nothing changes. Yeah, exactly. Because everybody's on a set of scrubs off, and we're back to where we started. So gentlemen, just want to give you a chance to promo yourselves. So, Owen, I mentioned you are co-host of the F1 Grid Talk alongside myself. Have you got anything else you want to promo? Anything you want to shout out?
Absolutely not.
That's what we'd love to hear.
I'm efficient with my time.
Something like that. Okay, lovely. So, Phil, as I mentioned, you're a member of the Clipship podcast. Not anything you want to add. Obviously, you want to promo that. Tell us more.
Yep, the GSP will be doing episode... What is it? I had the list over here. I'll retry. Of course, my deal goes and screws up right now. It's episode 142 this coming week. We'll go over the Mexican Grand Prix. We'll go over everything that went on in NASCAR this past weekend, any other major news and events and other series. MotoGP is coming to the end of their season. You can find us at Gripstrip Pod on Twitter and at Gripstrip Podcast on YouTube. we're basically anywhere you can find podcasts. You can find me at Philip G. Math. You can find my co-host Josh Huffine at JP Huffine. And his Twitch handle is USailor2. He does iRacing. He's really good at it. And yeah, so you can we'll go and look out for that episode 142 this coming week. And we'll go over all that, all the different racing all over the world. And also talk a little bit of NFL football and anything else that really comes to mind. So thanks, Tom, for hosting. I know it's been it's a long day for you guys. So thanks, everybody, for coming on here and doing a good job, as we always do here on the Grid Talk.
It's a pleasure, as always. And it's always good fun to have you on. Alex, have you got anything you want to promo? Anything you want to shout out?
No. I'm as I said last week, I've taken a bit of a hiatus from doing anything related to writing or anything. But people who are in touch on the F1 corner can see some of past articles I've written on classic Grand Prix races. In the meantime, I just enjoy coming on here to contribute to help to be with you guys and talk about the sport we all love and enjoy.
Brilliant. That was well. Thank you very much for joining me. Just before we wind up, I just want to say Grid Talk is available on YouTube, where most of our episodes are recorded live, such as this one. We're also available on Amazon Fire, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Music, Verbal, Omni Studio, and Pocket Cast. Just search Formula One Grid Talk for our back catalogue of shows with previews, reactions, and everything else to qualifying and race results. Please also consider supporting the channel on Patreon so we can get better mics, lights, and recording equipment. You can get your hands on some official Grid Talk merchandise at f1chronicle.com/store. Also, make sure you're subscribed, like I mentioned, so you're the first to know when each new episode is released. Also, I think if you're on YouTube, there's that little bell thing. Just go and click on it. I'll type in go live. It'll be worth it. We'll be back very soon with plenty more F1 content. Thank you very much for listening, watching, taking part, and Nostar, goodbye, night.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.